Mr. Welch, good morning to you.
Good morning, everyone. James Welch, representing the Donlingers, the appellants. It is a good morning, and I've been here quite a few times in the last several months. You've been good to me, so don't stop today. I'm here representing the Donlingers against some FELA lawyers that kind of screwed up representing them. They have a case where they have to sue under our Political Subdivision Act and didn't do it right. What's kind of interesting, and I ask you to either take notes or pull, but the complaint that was filed by the defendants for the Donlingers, when they filed it, they did it on 4/4/2014, just about 2 years after the accident of April 6, 2012. Interesting enough, in paragraph 2 of the complaint, they say that on April 5th, 2012, the day before the accident, notice of this claim was properly served upon the defendant Nickerson Township. I'm sure that they meant to say maybe April 5th, 2013, but in their complaint they said April 5th, 2012, the day before the accident, that they served the claim. And then they say that more than 6 months has lapsed since the notice of plaintiff's claim was served. They're spoofing. They never served upon the foregoing political subdivision that claim. They just didn't do it. Now, what are they looking at when they decide and understand this isn't an FELA case, this isn't a 3-year statute of limitations, and more attorneys that try to do political subdivisions, it's a bad law because you have to serve within a year. They didn't do that. Okay, there's a 2-year statute of limitations. They went to the law, the statute, 25222. It says you've got 2 years from the date of the negligence, or 1 year if you find out about the negligence after the 2 year after you're done representing. It's a stall. If you look at it, it's a stall. You can see by the complaint that they waited until 4/4/2014, or just before the 2 years was up as far as the statute of limitations on the actual accident. But what they're trying to do is we can delay this thing and delay this thing. Our negligence was failing to serve the claim to Nicholson Township on the 5th, and therefore let's keep going, and we'll appeal, and then the 2 years will be up. And there isn't anything they can do because the 2 years is up.
There's still the discovery exception, correct, under 25222.
Right, and so forth. But at the same time, they know that they've committed negligence. And so let's get this 2 years over with. And then, of course, they go through the appeal, which is dismissed by the Court of Appeals. And that is in June of 2016.
What's the date of discovery?
The date of the discovery of what?
Of the negligence.
The date of the discovery of the negligence was the date that the accident happened, which was April 6, 2012.
I think the question is, what's the date of discovery of the attorney's negligence? Not in the underlying case.
The date of the discovery of the attorney's negligence is not come out at all. As far as we're concerned, they probably knew at the time that they filed because of the way they filed their complaint. They are saying that they served.
When did your client discover the attorney's negligence?
I'm sorry. We have, and you've got all the evidence and so forth, and everything has been stipulated, too, as far as these dates. But this took place in July of 2016, which was about a month after the Court of Appeals dismissed the case in June of 2016.
What took place in July of 2016?
Well, there was a phone call to the clients. And if you look at another exhibit in this case, it's the affidavit of Jason Nelson. And Jason Nelson goes on in his affidavit is that he says that during the course of the representation, there is no date in his affidavit as to when he notified the Donlingers, but he says that during the course of the representation of the Donlingers, I initiated a telephone conference between myself and Terry and Valerie Donlinger.
Now, the parties have all agreed by virtue of the paragraph 9 in the amended complaint that says, we're in the legal malpractice case now, right? Paragraph 9, which says the lawyers told us they weren't going to pursue a petition for further review after the dismissal. Right?
That's what the conversation...
And that's admitted. That's admitted. So
right.
That, everybody seems to agree that
right.
was said. So what are we to infer about that comment? That comment logically occurred after the Court of Appeals dismissed it, and you have 30 days to file a PFR petition for further review.
Correct.
So that conversation logically occurred after the Court of Appeals dismissal. That's the 30 days that we're focused on. Do you agree with that by virtue of the admissions? Okay.
What
happened in that time frame? Because the question now is whether or not the malpractice case was timely filed.
The malpractice case came into us in February of 2018. What I'm saying is that when they looked at the statute on when you can sue a professional, they realized that you have 2 years. They forgot to look at continuous representation.
Well, I am addressing my questions to the idea that continuous representation might be relevant to the discussion. And therefore, the law on that is if the client learns of the error, meaning back there in the underlying case, during the representation, then continuous representation does not apply. Therefore, the client does not have the benefit of 2 years, but rather is redirected to 25222 and has 1 year since discovery.
If except that you have continuous representation.
Let's assume for the benefit of the inference in favor of the clients that there was continuous representation. Did the clients learn of the error prior to the termination of the relationship or after?
The clients learned in July. And according to in July of 2016, and according to what the affidavit says, they don't give a date on when it happened. According to the way we answered is that we got a phone call. But the phone call, according to the affidavit, just talks about, it just says not properly served. They don't know whether it was as far as served by summons are served as far as the political subdivision is concerned.
But let's assume for the inference in favor of the client that there was an error in the underlying case. When did the clients learn of it?
The client learned of it in July of 2016. Now, there was nothing of withdrawal or anything else. The client is still being represented by the attorneys.
Did they learn of it during the representation?
No.
Or after?
After the representation.
And on what piece of evidence do you make that assertion?
Only on the piece of evidence that what we said, as far as the stipulated facts were concerned, we got a phone call in July of 2016.
And that phone call may have occurred before the termination of the representation or after the termination of the representation?
I don't think it's relevant, but it probably occurred while they were still representing, because they made the phone call as representing them and telling them about the problems that they had in service, according to the affidavit. And
we're not going to do a petition for further review, and we would, as I understand it, in the future, close the file, i.e., the lawyer fires the client.
That isn't what it says in the affidavit.
I see. What does it say?
The affidavit merely says that this is alleged negligence as set forth in plaintiff's complaint. It does not go into detail as to what they actually did. And under the circumstances, there should be a letter or something certified or on the phone to say, hey, we did not serve properly in this case the township, the Nicholson Township, by, according to the statute, we had to serve them with notice within a year. According to the Nebraska statute, we made a mistake. It's legal malpractice. Here's the name and address and phone number of our insurance company, but we'll contact them to have them contact you.
Does our law on discovery require that the facts be that clear in order for a client to discover the professional's negligence?
Under the circumstances of something like this, where we're talking about two serves, I mean, he doesn't even talk in his affidavit. He doesn't say whether he's talking about serving the summons or serving the claim. And one of the most, you've got to tell the client, you need to understand that you only have 2 years to file a lawsuit against us or be forever barred.
Mr. Welsh, can you point us to any evidence in the record that after that July 2016 phone call, the lawyers represented your clients? They did something affirmative in representing
No, them. I can't.
Does that matter?
No, I don't think so, because we're still talking about continuous representation. What they should have done, these FELA lawyers, once they screwed up, they should have stopped and then gone on to sue Burlington Northern, because then there wouldn't be continuous representation. But they put the stall on as far as the representation is concerned and filed. They filed it. And if you look at these dates, everything is at the last day. Even though they lied on their complaint, they said that they filed it on April 5th, and we'll go along with they should have said 2013. That's the day before that Nicholson should have been served with it.
You answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
I have a question about continuous representation. I have a reading of Section 25-222. Continuous representation is not mentioned in that.
It is not mentioned.
So can you tell us where it comes from?
Right. Continuous representation really comes from continuous treatment. In other words, when you have a physician, let's say someone's in an automobile accident and injures their arm and injures their back, and the doctor, in doing surgery to the arm, makes a mistake. But after that mistake, he doesn't do anything further with the shoulder. So from that mistake, if it's learned at that time, you've got 2 years in which to sue the doctor. Now, if he continues to treat the shoulder, then we have continuous treatment. And that's where we come about with continuous representation by attorneys.
Does that theory predate the statute?
No, it does not. That theory comes from a couple of cases. A good friend of mine in this Zoen case of Dave Herzog, and then even though you and you can talk about the other case of Lincoln Grain. And even and Lincoln Grain, of course, said there was no continuous representation,
but the significance of that would have been in that significance of that one would have been in the CPA malpractice context.
Right. And they, and what they did, it was separate little items as far as the CPA was concerned. So the statute did start running. There wasn't continuous representation.
You got new accrual dates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Laughlin, good morning to you.
May it please the court, Mark Laughlin and Jacqueline DeLuca, Fraser Stryker for the defendants' appellants. I'd like to start with Justice Miller Lehrman's point. The law in Nebraska is absolutely clear that if the client is notified of the alleged negligence before the representation ends, continuous representation does not apply, period. We've cited the multiple cases in our brief that this court has held over 20 years. And the evidence, and I believe Mr. Welch acknowledged twice in the oral argument, in fact, that the continuous that there was representation passed when his clients were notified. And the record is undisputed in that regard based upon the affidavit of Jay Nelson, who said, I picked up the phone, I told him about the opinion, I told him what they said about the statute of limitations miss, and there, after that happened, we ended our representation, we closed our file.
Does the affidavit suggest that this all happened in one conversation? There's one phone call where the facts of the negligence are disclosed and their relationship has ended? Is the affidavit not clear on that, and does any of that matter?
The latter. None of that matters, but the phone call is in paragraph 5, and then in paragraph 6 of Mr. Nelson's affidavit, he then further states that he advised to the Donnellingers that their representation would end and they would be closing their file after advising them of the alleged negligence. So it's 100% clear, Your Honor, as to the what happened first.
We don't have dates in the affidavit, though, do we?
The dates are not in the affidavit, but that's irrelevant under continuous rep. It doesn't matter when it happened. It's the which happened first. And I would like to...
I beg your pardon. Nobody's giving us dates except for the answers to interrogatories by the clients during which they say that within 30 days after June what's-its, they learned of this.
Correct.
But that's a continuum.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yes, exactly.
So what happened first?
What,
without dates, what happened first?
Well, that's...
The phone call...
It's undisputed that Mr. Nelson told them of what happened, told them that the court held that the statute was missed, told them that their case was dismissed. They were then on notice. They knew, okay? And then the affidavit, while and perhaps there could have been more clarity, okay, but the only point that matters is 100% clear and undisputed in the record that it was after that time that then the relationship ended. And I would
to tie it down to time, however, and I asked your opposing counsel the same question, is one thing the parties seem to agree is that the lawyers said, we're not going to take a petition for further review. Everybody seems to agree that was part of the exchange. So the time during when that is a relevant comment would be during the PFR period, the 30 days after the dismissal. Isn't that logical?
And Your Honor, your point being, I'm not sure I'm
my
tracking
point
with
being,
your point.
We're trying to tie this down to like a real date if we can, but what we've only been able to do is get a spread.
I think that's fair on the record, but my response is it doesn't matter where within that 30 days because the record is undisputed as to which happened first. There's only two relevant things for continuous rep because I want to get to Justice Frydenberg's comment. I want to make sure I have enough time to get back to his comment on the continuous rep not being in the statute. But to summarize, okay, this court has held time and time again that here's the way you figure out, does continuous representation, does it hold or is it applicable or is it not? And there's only one thing that matters. This court has held if the plaintiffs were notified, the clients were notified before the representation ended, it doesn't apply, period, end of story. And my point is this record is undisputed and clear, and Mr. Welch doesn't really dispute that those facts are clear 100%. And if I could turn, Justice Frydenberg, to your comment on where is the continuous rep in the statute. There's no question that they lose under the discovery rule. The 2 years and the discovery rule is what our legislature said. Not 1 year, not 4 years, but 2 years. And they said, the legislature said, there's only one way that you can extend the 2 years. And that one way is the discovery rule. No continuous rep. The other thing that we all agree on, they've never pled the discovery rule because that, unlike his 2 years that they're asking for, the discovery rule only gets them 1 year. So everybody agrees they lose under the discovery rule. That's why they haven't appealed it. That's why they didn't argue to Judge Wheelock. That's why they're focusing on continuous rep. And by the way, we're not alleging Mr. Welch committed any negligence. I've known him since I was a boy. I grew up in his neighborhood, and he is an excellent lawyer, and he didn't get this case until the statute has already run. But Justice Frydenberg, to your point, that we all agree this. The Nebraska legislature says, here's when you have to sue. 2 years and the discovery rule. And we all agree, Mr. Welch agrees,
Should we overrule our continuous representation jurisprudence?
You don't need to do that in this case, Your Honor, and I can tell you you know exactly where I'm going, because the answer is no. All you need to do is affirm under the multiple cases that they were notified before the end of before the representation ended. It's 100% on this record, so no. But getting back to your point, Justice Frydenberg, we all agree that the constrictors that the legislature set, they're outside of that. They can't file. And my point that I wanted to make and pick up on your comment, which I appreciated, was what Mr. Welch is asking you to do, even if you wanted to overrule all the cases that have happened, what he's asking you to do is expand. Okay, rewrite the rules.
Well, now you've hit on the other end of the spectrum, because Justice Papik is asking, should we overrule the continuous jurisprudence, continuous representation, right? And what Mr. Welch, in effect, is asking us to adopt the exhaustion of appeal doctrine, which is not very popular in the other states. In other words, the representation continues through the end of an appeal. That's day one.
The representation can, well, first of all, that's not pled. That's not what is requested. What he's requested is, and what his brief says is, this court in Bellino somehow kind of sort of overruled past precedent. That's the slim point that he made. My point is, even if you don't agree with me that the record is 100% clear, which I really truly believe it is, on the only facts that matter to this court, okay, it's 100% clear. Even if you got there, even if you wanted to overrule the three or four cases that you've held, what the law is, you still, Justice Frydenberg, have to handle your question, which is, my gosh, so here's what, is this what we're doing? This is what Mr. Welch is asking me to do? Here's what the legislature said, okay? We're outside that. It's a no. They can't file it. And now we've created this judicially created continuous rep rule, which, by the way, and this isn't in our brief, Justice Frydenberg, but to answer your question, the continuous rep rule, at least in medical malpractice, originated in the 40s, before the 2-year statute of limitations was passed, 25-222, in 1971. So it predated, or the initial one in medical malpractice, continuous rep rule, predated the statute.
What's the rationale for why do we have a continuous treatment or a continuous representation rule?
Well, I don't know. What I was looking for is I can tell you why this court has held the limitation of if you know about it, you can't sit on your rights, which is, quote, to hold otherwise would merely encourage clients to sit on their hands with full knowledge of negligence on the part of the professional who is serving them, knowing that the clock would not start to run on their claim until they actually fired the practitioner. That's this court in Economy Housing.
Is that versus Rosenberg?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. So what he's asking you to do is use a judicially created doctrine to come to a result that is the exact opposite of what the legislature has prescribed. So even if you bought everything from a theoretical fairness standpoint, even if you bought everything that he said, I would suggest, with all due respect to the court, that this would be not interpreting the laws of the legislature, but expanding them and rewriting them to turn a no, you're too late, and then using a judicially created doctrine to come to the exact opposite conclusion in this case, because, Justice Freidberg, of your point that this is not statutorily codified. This is a judicially created doctrine. And all I would suggest is whatever the reason is and whatever the conscriptions and boundaries that you all choose to put on this judicially created doctrine, whatever they are, they cannot be, under any circumstances, lead in any specific case like this one to the opposite result of what the legislature's rules are. Whatever they can be, they can't be that, and that's exactly what he's asking you to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Welsh, I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal, so we will go on to the next case of the day, which is Fitchy versus Potter. And actually, there are two cases, Jeffrey V on behalf of Jackson F versus Sarah P.